Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Come Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. Text number 39. Sarvasatmadehaya
Sarvasatmadehaya
Visheshaya
Staviyase
Namastray Lokya Palaya Saha Ojo Palaya Cha
Saha Ojo Palaya Cha
Sarva Sattvatma Dehaya
Sarva Sattvatma Dehaya
Viseshaya Staviyase
Viseshaya Staviyase
Namastray Lokya Palaya
Namastray Lokya Palaya
Sarva, all, sattva, existence, atma, soul, dehaya,
unto the body,
viseshaya,
diversity.
Staviyase
unto the material world.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Offering obeisances.
Trailokya.
Three planetary systems.
Palaya.
Maintainer. Saha.
Along with.
Pujaha.
Prowess.
Balaya,
Balaya,
unto the strength. Cha,
also.
Is there somebody who's an expert on the mid-range needs to be eased back on this a little bit, please? My dear Lord, you are the gigantic universal form which contains all the individual bodies of the living entities. You are the maintainer of the three worlds. And as such, you maintain the mind, senses, body, and air of life within them. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. As the individual body of the living entity is composed of millions of cells, germs, and microbes, the universal body of the Supreme Lord similarly contains all the individual bodies of the living entities. Lord Shiva is offering... That's better. Yeah, now maybe up a bit louder. Yeah, that's good. Great. Lord Shiva is offering his obeisances to the universal body, which includes all other bodies, so that everyone's body may fully engage in devotional service. Since this individual body is composed of senses, all the senses should be engaged in devotional service. For instance, the smelling instrument, the nose, can engage in smelling the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. The hands can engage in cleansing the temple of the Lord, etc. Indeed, being the life air of every living entity, the Lord is the maintainer of the three worlds. Consequently, he can induce every living entity to engage in his real life's duty with full bodily and mental strength. Thus, every living entity should serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his prana, life, artha, wealth, intelligence, and words. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 22, Text 35, Eta vaj jamma sa phalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranayar atayar diya vacha shreya acharanam sada. Even though one may desire to engage in the service of the Lord, without sanction, one cannot do so. Lord Shiva is offering his prayers in many different ways in order to show living entities how to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Om Agana Dinirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chapsur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mokam Karoti Vachalam Langhayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Sarva Sattva Madehaya. Vise Shaya Staviyase. Nama Trailokya Palaya Saha Ojo Balaya Cha. So, some interesting points here. Sarva Sadhavatna Dehaya. So Prabhupada gives the example here in a purport. As the individual body of a living entity is composed of millions of cells, germs and microbes, the universal body similarly contains all the individual bodies of the living entities. So, everything is contained within the body of God. Yet, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, even though everything is contained within me, I am not within everything. Huh? I am not within everyone. Well, he is actually, in the form of the super soul. Ridesh Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Sarvabhutanam Yantra Rudani Mayaya. All of the living entities are being directed ultimately by the super soul. So everything is within Krishna, yet Krishna is not within everything. Right? The consciousness of a living entity is such, in a mode of ignorance, they're not able to perceive the presence of God within everything. The devotee can, however. The devotees can. by the performance of bhakti. Bhakti is the process by which the devotees are able to see Krishna within everything. Right? Hiranyakashipu challenged Prahlad Maharaj, "Where is your God? Is he in this pillar?" Huh? He wasn't able to see that the Lord was present everywhere. In fact, he thought that the Lord didn't exist. The nature of the demons is that they want to deny the existence of God. And in fact, they'll protest when God is being served. And when the devotees are glorifying Krishna, then one of the features of the neighbours is that they get upset. The demons get upset. Sorry. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful to keep the demons happy and our neighbours as well. This is what happens when Krishna is being glorified. Then those who are inimical to the existence of God, they become upset, angry, disturbed. Right? The appearance of the Lord is challenging for the non-devotees. For the devotees, they're in great ecstasy and they are very happy that the Lord is appearing. When there is a diminishing of spiritual practice, when the devotees are being harassed, then Krishna appears to protect the devotees. Praritranaya sadunam. Krishna's main purpose is to come to protect his devotees. And it's mentioned here, actually. What is he? Namas trilokya palaya. Right? I offer my respects to the protector of the three worlds. Right? Namas trilokya palaya. So the devotees are always very happy when they're being persecuted, and they know then that the Lord will appear. So even in difficult circumstances and in difficult situations, the devotees maintain their faith in the Lord. This is one of the characteristics of Krishna's appearance. When Bhumi went to Lord Brahma, wasn't it? Bhumi went to Lord Brahma and she complained about, or she was in great distress because of the preponderance of demons on the earth and how they were causing a great disturbance for the pious citizens. And so she petitioned Lord Brahma to seek assistance from the Lord to protect the planet from the influence of the preponderance of demoniac kings. And so Lord Brahma and the demigods went to the shore of the Milk Ocean. Shirsagar. Yes. And they offered their prayers to the Lord. At that time, even the demigods couldn't see the Lord, but he received their prayers, and then by like transmission, subtle transmission of transcendental message, Lord Brahma was informed of the Lord's mission. Lord Brahma was sufficiently potent and empowered to receive the message from the Lord. And he explained that he was going to appear, that the demigods should prepare themselves. We can see Krishna has control of all of the universal affairs. It's all working according to his plan. And so he told the demigods, go and take birth in a family of the Yadus, because in due course of time I will appear. Because his purpose was to protect the interests of the devotees, to protect the devotees, Puritranaya Sarunam. And as a consequence, Vinashaya Chatuskritam. As a consequence, the demons are also annihilated, because that's not his main purpose. Prabhupada explains that, Krishna explains, or the Bhagavatam explains that the material energy does away with the demons in due course of time in any case. It's not his main purpose. The main purpose of the Lord is to come to associate with and to meet with the devotees. And because the devotees know of the Lord's purpose, then they're happy to undergo any trials or tribulations in order to meet the Lord. And also to associate with the Lord and cooperate with him and participate in his pastimes. And to that end, the devotees are prepared to undergo great austerities and undergo any kind of difficulty in order to be with Krishna. If you look at the austerities of the Yadavas, because Kamsa had the upper hand. Right? He had made his alliances with all of the big demons, Jarasandha, Dhanukasura, Agasura, Banasura, Putana, and these. Did I say Jarasandha? So all of these demoniac kings had all banded together, and they were basically giving the Yadavas, and this is the demigods who had taken birth, giving them all a hard time. Some of them were Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained, some of them were living like cowherds, men and women, in the barns of their friends. Yeah? So they were being persecuted. If you look at Vasudeva and Devaki on their wedding day, there was the omen that came, or the voice that came out of the sky and warned Kamsa, the eighth child of Devaki will kill you. Right? And so immediately Kamsa was prepared to chop off Devaki's head. His sister's, you know. And of course, you know, that's, as is mentioned in the Krishna book, that's not the most auspicious thing to do on a woman's on the day she gets married, chop her head off. So anyway, Vasudeva had to think very, very quickly how to appease Kamsa, because, and Prabhupada explains, demons will do anything at the drop of a hat without thinking of the consequences. Right? And so, whereas devotees are much more measured and concerned about the effects of what they do and the future impact, the future consequences of what they do. And so therefore their activities are far more measured and determined and deliberate. Right? So Vasudeva had to think think on his feet very quickly how he could appease Kamsa so that he wouldn't kill his wife. Huh? And so what did he do? He offered Kamsa, that he would provide each of the children when they were born to him. Right? And Kamsa bought it. Right? he bought the offer, and so he didn't kill Devaki, his sister, straight away. But just think about that. What kind of a deal is that? That you offer your children, and what happened? Every time a child was born to Vasudeva and Devaki, Vasudeva, keeping his word, gave his children to Kamsa, who then promptly killed them. Whew. That's heavy, isn't it? Yet Vasudeva stayed true to his vow. Horrible vow when you think about it. And why did he do that? He accepted great inconvenience and activities that put fear into the heart of himself and of Devaki. When the first child was born, then Vasudeva delivered the child to Kamsa, and Kamsa said, "Oh no, it's okay. It's not the first child I have to worry about. It's the eighth child, right? So it's okay. You can." But then Narada Muni is a stirrer, right? Do you have it? If somebody was a troublemaker in school, we used to call them a stirrer. It's very interesting why he did it. Narada Muni went to Kamsa and informed him what was going on. The demigods have all taken birth, you know, Lord Vishnu is coming, the eighth child is going to kill you, you need to do something about it. And so then Kamsa changed his mind and put Vasudeva and Devaki in prison, right, and then killed the child. Heavy. Now, why did Narada Muni do that? Why did Vasudeva hand over each one of his children? Horrible thing, knowing that they would be killed. Why did he do that? Why did they do that? Anybody like to say? What's that? Certainly did, but I don't know whether that's why. Yeah?
He was eager to see Krishna.
Yes, they were eager to see Krishna. They knew that each child's birth was bringing Krishna's appearance closer. Right? They wanted the eighth child to be born. They wanted to see the appearance of the Lord. And they could see, this is a transcendental quality of a devotee, they could see Krishna's hand in even the difficulties. This is amazing, you know. Not that they wanted everything to be, oh, why isn't everything easy for us? Right? I'm a devotee, how come everything, life is tough? Right? I'm a devotee and everything should be nice. Huh? It's not like that. We see in the lives of the great devotees that very often there are challenges placed in the obstacles placed in the path of a devotee making spiritual progress. We shouldn't expect material prosperity just because, or that life will be easy just because we've taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We see that in the case of Vasudeva and Devaki. Each time, the next child was born, Vasudev would stick to his vow, because it's a symptom of a devotee. It's also a symptom of Krishna, actually. Krishna is described by the demigods as Satyavrata. He always keeps his vow. And what's his vow? Paritranaya sadhana, is to protect the devotees. That's his vow. What is it? Punteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranasyati. Because, you know, the material world is a place of coming and going. Right? It is asat. We are by nature sat. Eternal. But we're in the material world, which is always, it's a state of ebb and flow, coming and going. And so the devotee knows that one moment I may be prosperous, the next moment I may be a pauper. Right? But not be disturbed by that change, because that's the nature of the material world. It is designed in such a way so that it will give us trouble. What is it? Durga. Durga is a personification of the material energy. Durga means tough going. Tough going. Durga. So, actually, we can't be happy in the material world. You can't be. We're looking for happiness in the wrong place. Have you noticed that? I think, you know, if I get the latest techno gadget, my life will be solved. My problems will be solved. This is the headspace of somebody who sits at a desk all day and plays with it. Not works with a computer, you know, plays with the computer's doing it. So I think, the latest version of the software will solve my problems. Now, guess what? Usually produces another three problems. Right? They change something and now it doesn't work the way it used to. Right? So we're thinking by material adjustments we can be happy. But actually, you can't. You can't be happy by material adjustments. We have to just tolerate it. Right? And we can take inspiration from somebody like Vasudev. Look at the struggle that he had to go through. He and Devaki, Vasudev and Devaki, had to go through. Their first six children were killed by Kamsa. And that was their service, actually, when you think about it. That was their service. To facilitate Krishna's appearance. Pretty amazing when you think about it. If you think your service is tough, you know, every now and again we get challenged by our service. Have you experienced that? It's a challenge. There's some inconvenience or there's some struggle. This year we've had quite a few inconveniences when I think about it. Is that right, Mathura? We lost Crossways. Well, we didn't lose it, but that was a very unpleasant experience. Some of the most unpleasant experiences I've had in, I guess, it's life. Right? I said, well, it is. It's life. Comes and goes. For 30 years, 35 years, we had such a wonderful facility. Wonderful facility. And then it was taken away. It's like, why me? But that's what will happen. Whatever wonderful facility you get, it's going to be taken away. And sooner or later. Huh? Inevitable. Huh? Inevitable. You know, we're young and handsome and full of vibrancy and enthusiasm, and then gradually it all gets taken away. Hey, Mahatma? Yep. Even, and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. You know, at 35 or 45, we think, yay, I'm cool. The material energy is powerful, powerful, powerful. So much so that we can't appreciate how powerful the material energy is, because we think that's who we are. We're fully bewildered by it. So we shouldn't be looking for material solutions to our problems, because they're not usually solutions in any case. We shouldn't be looking for happiness in the material world. Our purpose, Prabhupada says, is our purpose is to attain immortality. Right? Our real purpose is to attain immortality, and that's done by performing bhakti. Bhaktiya mama vijana. If we want to know Krishna, if we want to understand Krishna, if we want to rise up above the changes, the ebb and flow of material existence, and uncover our real identity, our spiritual identity. You know, on the material platform, our identity changes all of the time, right? How many of you were born in India? Raise your hands. Okay. How many are now Australians? Raise your hands. Yeah. See? You were an Indian a few years ago, and now you're an Aussie. Huh? You can change. It changes. Right? Or just the body. 1 minute we're Krishna's age. The next minute we're Mahatma's age. Right? So always changing, always changing. Yet our sense of self still remains the same. Right? When my mum saw me as a little baby, she used to call me Andy, right? And when she saw me when I was 50, she still called me Andy. I was the same person, body completely changed. Still, I was the same person. Right? So, if we know that we're not the body, then it's our responsibility to find out what our... Because, you know, as an Australian, you have certain duties. Right? You're supposed to follow the laws of the country, pay your taxes. There are certain duties that you perform. When you live in India, you also have duties. Right? You pay your taxes. You obey the laws of the land, mostly, occasionally. You might not even pay taxes, I don't know. So, but you have certain responsibilities. But we know we're not those things yet. We're not aware of what our responsibilities are as that transcendent identity that's above all of those changes. Right? We witness all of those changes as we go through life. And so it's our duty to understand, because that's the eternal nature of the soul. And it's our duty to understand our eternal identity. Samritatvaya kalpate. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Amrita Vaya. We need to know our Amrita nature. Right? And within that Amrita nature, or that eternal nature, is our relationship with Krishna, with God. It's revealed by the process of self-realization. And of course, the process of self-realization is the process of bhakti. Right? Beginning with hearing and chanting and so forth. Smelling the flowers. Cleaning the temple. Huh? Prabhupada mentions here. Smelling the flowers. Engaging one's hands in cleansing the temple. Actually, bhakti is quite simple. And we see that in the nature, in the character of Vasudeva and Devaki. Very simple-hearted, in the sense that, you know, every year they took their son to Kamsa and he killed them. But simple, simple. He understood what his service was. The service wasn't particularly relishable, but yet it was service nevertheless. And he knew that every year, if I offer my children to Kamsa, that brings Krishna's appearance closer. Right? So, by the process of bhakti, one is, only by the process of bhakti is one able to establish that relationship with the Lord. And it's simple. Simple. Bhakti is a simple process. It's not very complicated. Patram pushpam param tvayam yome bhaktya prayachati. All Prabhupada says, all we need to do is offer a leaf, tulsi leaf, a flower, fruit, water. You know, the actual practice of bhakti is very, very simple. Everything that we do, yat karochi, yadash, yashchahosi, yachchi. Forgotten verse. Everything that we do, everything that we offer or give away, everything, all austerities that we might perform, all activities are done simply as an offering to Krishna. And all of our activities should be performed with that mood or with that mentality, despite whatever austerities or whatever obstacles or whatever difficulties there might be. One should remain attached to their vrata, to their vow. Dridha vrata, determined vow. And we saw that, we see that with Vasudeva's offering of his children to Kamsa every year with the mood, and also Narada Muni. You say, why is Narada Muni being so mischievous that he's encouraging Kamsa to act in such an atrocious way? It's because it was to bring Krishna's appearance as quickly as possible so the devotees could have their association with him. And of course that's the fruit of bhakti. Even though Krishna is not personally present with the devotee, by the performance of bhakti, the devotee is able to see Krishna's presence within everything. This is the shakti, the bhakti shakti. The bhakti shakti, the performance of bhakti, gives the devotee the facility or the ability. What is it? Desham satata yuktanam, bhajatam, prittipurvakam, tadami, buddhijogam tam, yenam ambapayamkite. Krishna says that I give to those devotees who are constantly engaged in serving me, I give them the intelligence by which they can understand me. Tesham evanukampatam mahamma jnana jantamaha. I, dwelling within their heart, destroy the darkness of ignorance with the torch or the lamp, the deepa of transcendental knowledge. And it's not just some superficial understanding. The process of bhakti gives the devotee a very deep realization of who is Krishna, who they are, what their relationship is, and how we should act in that relationship. This is the process of bhakti. It's very, very powerful. We should never minimize the potency of what we're doing. It's powerful enough to establish our relationship with Krishna in a substantial way. So that even though from the material perspective we can't see God, but still within the heart, Krishna destroys the ignorance and the devotee is able to perceive Krishna's presence in all of the interactions that he has. And we see that here in this verse also. That we are described as being within the body of the Supreme Lord. So we're part of him. Huh? We're part of, well, Mame Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. We are an eternal part of God. But at the same time, not. This is the quandary of the bhakti understanding, is that we're simultaneously one with but different from. And you can only understand that by the performance of bhakti. So, Vasudeva and Devaki offered their six sons to Kamsa as part of their devotional service in order to bring on Krishna's appearance. And after the death of the sixth son, the seventh child of Vasudeva and Devaki was who? Balaram. But Balaram was, everybody thought that Balaram was actually a miscarriage. But Balaram appeared in the womb of Devaki in order to set things up for Krishna. Provide a bed and different things, and to purify the Prabhupada explains how the six sons of Devaki were, what is it, the Shadgarbha. They were demons in a previous life who were cursed to be killed by their father. It was a Kalanimi. And Kamsa was an incarnation, was a reincarnation of Kalanimi. And so the killing of the six sons of Devaki represent the six enemies of the mind. And the killing of each one represents the purification of the mind of the devotee through fear. Interestingly enough, Devaki was scared of what Kamsa would do. So similarly also, the devotees are scared of the material influence. Right? Scared of the material energy. And scared of the enemies of the mind. Kamko, lobh, moha, madana, is it? Madness and matsarya, envy. There's two lists of six in different places. The killing of the six sons represents the killing of the enemies of the mind, The devotee, Prabhupada explains, the devotees have fear of the influence of the material energy. And as a result, they're diligent. They're focused on their sadhana and their performance of bhakti to free themselves from the influence of the material energy and these enemies of the mind. So that one's able to then meditate on the performance of one's devotional service, one's bhajan, if you like. Gaugavinda Maharaj used to, when he would meet you, he would say, "How's your bhajan?" Not, "How's it going?" We say, "How's it going, mate?" But the devotees say, "How's your bhajan?" Because by the steady performance of bhajan, all of these unwanted things are gradually removed from the heart. And one is able to then remain steady in the performance of one's service. So the fear of the material energy and its influence inspires the devotees to be diligent in the performance of their bhajan, right? And their clearing of, you know, our practice, especially through chanting Hare Krishna, is to gradually clear away these anattas or these unwanted things and just focus purely on our devotional service, our devotional practice. This is the performance of bhajan. We're initially in the offensive stage, right? Where we're committing offences, but it is recommended that we come to the clearing stage very quickly so that we're removing the obstacles in our path, in the path of bhakti, over the day when we can chant Hare Krishna and not distracted. This fear in Devaki, fear of Kamsa, is the fear of the material energy within the heart of the devotee. So that, you know, Prabhupada said on more than one occasion, the problem with my disciples is they don't fear Maya. We think Maya's okay. Oh, Maya, my friend. It's like Prabhupada says, the male ass goes to the she ass for a bit of sense gratification, and then she just kicks him in the face. And he thinks, oh, she loves me. we sometimes become comfortable in our Maya. You think, oh yeah, Maya likes me. Oh, that's proof. But that fear of the material energy and how it can entrap us again and keep us, these attachments, these anattas, keep us in the material world. And so the devotees perform their bhakti with a vrata, dridha vrata. Was it satatam kirtayanto mam? What's the next line? Yadantascha dridha vrata, with a determined vow. That's why at initiation we make the vows. Now, Prabhupada was very disappointed with his disciples when they couldn't follow their vows. He said, but he promised. He promised. But he didn't do it. You know, how much disappointment should a Prabhupada must have felt when his disciples left him. Yet, he didn't dwell on that. He only saw the good things that they did. This is the quality of a Vaishnava, of a devotee, is to see the good and not dwell. You can be sure that he saw the bad, just like we see the bad. But we focus on the good, the positive. Right? So the determination of the devotee is the fear of the influence of the material energy. And that relief and that sense of protection and affection coming from Krishna when we purely perform our devotional service without material motivation. You know, the other day, Stoker Krishna Prabhu shared some images of Ratha Yatra performed in the 70s. Huh? And he said, why do I feel some attraction and some sentiment? Why do I feel some sentiment towards the activities of the devotees when I wasn't there? Right? He wasn't there. We went there in the 70s when the devotees were. And it was the video was accompanied by a soundtrack, a song written by Mangalananda. I looked at the video and I was also affected. I wasn't there also. But of course, we're vicarious by nature. Vicarious means we enjoy through others. Hands up those who are parents. Do you feel happy when your child achieves good marks at school? Huh? Of course you do. If your kid kicks a goal playing soccer, oh, go Rishi. We feel happy when we see. And when you see these pictures of the Ratha Yatra, you see the devotees' dedication to Prabhupada. You see the austerities that they performed with little material facility. Huh? The devotees, and even sometimes not success, when Shyam Sundara built the first Rath cart in London. The first Rath cart, right? How many metres did it go? 10 or 15 before the wheel broke. Collapsed. So, you know, this, the mood of surrender and the obvious austerities and sacrifice and all inspired by Srila Prabhupada, actually, where the devotees gave up everything. Prabhupada would say to, you know, visiting dignitaries, why is it that my disciples, they didn't know about Krishna 5 years ago, and they've come from wealthy families, middle class families, they could be sleeping in nice beds, you know, living in comfort, yet they give up everything and are happy to surrender their lives to Krishna. So it's that mood of sacrifice. And also to see that the happiness and the enthusiasm and appreciation for what Prabhupada had given, that's inspiring to sacrifice everything and to just do everything for Krishna's pleasure without concern for one's own personal benefit. This is a real nature of bhakti. And to achieve that state of, it's not very difficult. It generally comes from chanting with that mood of clearing out the material anattas. Not difficult. Well, difficult also. Huh? Give up the material attachments and just surrender to Krishna. When we hang on, usually we're hanging on to something. Oh, and each one of us knows what it is that we're hanging on to. Right? But to give that up and then to give everything to Krishna, and then in that process of surrender, then achieving the protection that Krishna promises, there's nothing more satisfying. You see that in the faces of and the expressions of the devotees in those old movies, especially of the Ratha Yatra. Because if you want to experience prema bhakti, then the Rath Yatra is a very graphic example of how one can achieve that sense of prema bhakti by the performance of Rath Yatra. Why is that? Can anybody say? Why is that? But why? What? It's one of the five angas of bhakti that is an impetus for prema, right? Worshipping the deity. And especially because it's such an intimate pastime, as you say. The performance of Rath Yatra is performed in the mood of the gopis calling Krishna to come back to Vrindavan. Very powerful. Okay, so Lord Balaram appeared to purify the resting place of Krishna so that his appearance could be facilitated. And of course Krishna instructed Yogamaya to transfer Lord Balaram to the womb of Rohini. So it appeared that Balaram's appearance was, it appeared that there was a miscarriage, but actually Yogamaya had transferred Balaram after he performed his service of purifying the environment. And of course Lord Balaram represents the spiritual master, right? And this is why we need to take shelter of the spiritual master in order to prepare our own heart for the present, for the appearance of Krishna. And so we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and by following the instructions of the spiritual master we qualify ourselves, purify ourselves, such that Krishna can reveal himself within the heart. Right? So the Devaki's womb was purified by the appearance of Lord Balaram. And then Krishna appeared within the heart, within the mind of Vasudev, and then not by seminal implantation or impregnation, but rather by transcendental process, spiritual meditation. The form of the Lord was transferred from Vasudev's mind into the heart of Devaki, and in that way then Krishna appeared within the womb of Devaki. Not a material process, but a spiritual process of impregnation. When Krishna appears, he doesn't appear like us. We are forced to take birth by the force of our bad karma in the womb of our mothers. You know, in this day and age, more children are killed than are born. Hare Krishna. So, woof. You're lucky to be here. My mum told me once that my youngest brother was an accident. Too much detail, Mum. You probably didn't have to tell me that. But anyway. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Because where did Krishna appear? It's said that Krishna was born as the son of Maharaj Nanda, right? And Yashoda Nanda, right? Nanda Nanda and Yashoda Nanda. But he's also the son of Devaki. So where was he born? Does anybody know?
Vrindavan. Where was Krishna born?
Both. You want a two-way bet?
Two-way bet.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? When the Lord appeared in Kamsa's prison, how did he appear? Which form did he appear in? Narayana, yes. Four-armed Vishnu. But then how did he appear in Gokul? Two-man form. Yeah, so he actually appeared in two places. That's pretty far out. Something that we can't do. Appearing. Although, mind you, isn't it interesting? Now I think about it. For those who are part of the Sankirtan mission, right? The Sankirtan Jagya, we get residence. Well, assuming that we become pure devotees, we get residence in both Navadvip and Vrindavan. So you can be in two places at once. But we can be in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And also, and in fact, this is how we gain entrance, through performing the Sankirtan pastimes with Lord Chaitanya and the Panchatattva. Isn't that far out? That's how we get entrance. We are given a double banger in this Kali Yuga. This doesn't happen all the time. Doesn't happen all the time. But we get the opportunity to be present within the pastimes of the Panchatattva and the Sankirtan mission, even now. Especially now. And at the same time, by the performance of that jagya, we get an opportunity to also become aware of our role or our position in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So Prabhupada does explain how Krishna appeared in two places, actually. This is quite amazing. He appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, and at the same time he appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. So today is that day upon which we meditate on Lord Krishna's appearance. We meditate on our own performance of bhakti. We meditate tomorrow on our relationship with the spiritual master. And rededicate ourselves to that surrendering process. Yes, this year, tomorrow, I will perfect my life and every day thereafter by surrendering everything to you, Srila Prabhupada. And surrendering, ultimately by surrendering everything to Srila Prabhupada and to our various Siksha and Diksha gurus, we are ultimately surrendering everything to Krishna. Manasa deho geho. Bhaktivinoda Thakur leads us in that meditation. My mind, my body, my home, everything that I have, I give it to you. Actually, it doesn't belong to us in any case. It's an illusion to think that it's mine, ours. It all belongs to Krishna anyway. He's given it to us temporarily for us to look after. So at least my prayer should be, Krishna, this is yours. Please let me look after it properly. You know, I was listening to the first recorded Janmashtami ceremony in 1968 in Montreal. And It's about an hour and 20 minutes long, this recording. And Prabhupada speaks for the first half an hour. But then he calls on his disciples and he said, each one of you, I want you to speak. Pretty far out. And it was 10 o'clock at night. And Prabhupada said, you know, we've got another 2 hours to go. Really sweet, sweet recording, actually. But what was really sweet was to hear his disciples speak about Krishna. Really nice. And the first one was Janardana. And he was saying how everything, actually, Krishna is our father, right? Because we all come from Krishna. By this verse here, we're all within the body of God. Huh? And so everything that we have comes from him. Huh? And Janardana was saying that we think, again on this theme, of we think that we can be happy in the material world. But he made a point, nice point. He said, actually, everything doesn't belong to us. It belongs to Krishna. And he said, when we take more than we need, we're actually a thief. It's always a quandary. Am I taking too much? Is this necessary? You ever have that? Worry about that? Am I taking too much? I guess the less you take, you're okay. But of course, you know, we also shouldn't be Phagu Vairagya, you know, falsely renounced. There's a fine balance. But anyway, I thought it was really inspiring to hear. Now, these devotees, some of them must have only been, like Janardana probably wasn't old, he was a devotee not older than a year, but his philosophical fluency was incredible. And I was thinking about it, and I think this is it was the result of regularly hearing Srila Prabhupada speak, right? Hearing a philosophy. And of course, their own realizations, but using so many examples coming directly from Srila Prabhupada, quite amazing. But again, that mood of everything should be respected as Krishna's property. And that, you know, that mood of renunciation, everything should be used in Krishna's service. So we get an opportunity today, tomorrow, we can meditate on making that offering out of appreciation. Radha Balabha, Gaunitai, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra, our Shaligram, Trivikram, and Lord Nisringadev, and so many others, Srila Prabhupada, they are exceptionally kind upon us, very merciful. And so we get an opportunity today and tomorrow to meditate on the appearance of the Lord, and meditate on the appearance of the Lord within our own hearts, and how that appearance of the Lord can manifest when we perform bhakti. But the right kind of bhakti, it's not jnana mishra bhakti or karma mishra bhakti. It is meant to be shuddha bhakti, which means we're not looking for material acquisitions, we're not looking for learning, but we're looking for practical engagement in devotional service. In fact, actually, too much learning can be an obstacle in the practice of bhakti. We want the right amount of learning to know that I should surrender and then do it. We've got to do it. That way then we'll get that shelter. And we'll be happy too. Too worried about our personal considerations, but we'll be concerned more about what's my service, how can I please the spiritual master, how can I establish my relationship with Krishna based on that clearing stage of bhakti. That's where we want to be, out of the offensive stage and into the clearing stage, so that we can make progress to the uttam platform, all based on steady bhajan, steady sadhana. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions at this point? Yes, sir.
Why did even the voice need to warn Kamsa?
Why did the voice need to warn Kamsa? Why do you think?
I don't know.
You don't know? That's good. Okay. Why did the voice need to warn Kamsa that he was going to be killed by the eighth son of Devaki? Why? Anybody know?
Sets the tone for the story.
Yes, it creates the tension. Before that, everything was just fine. There's a wedding and, oh, very well, let's go. Everybody's having fun. Right? But then, in every good story, there has to be tension. Otherwise, there's no story. And, you know, it's the good guys against the bad guys. The devotees against the demons. And really, that's the crux of the whole, you know, it's the whole story. It's the demons are out of control. Right? And who's the personification of demon? Who? Who's the personification of demon? It starts with a K. And it's not Krishna. It's Kamsa. He's a big demon. Huh? And what is Krishna's purpose? See, for right from the word go, Krishna's purpose is established. Huh? Kill the demons. Even in Kali Yuga, it's killing demons. Right? Who's the demons? Us. But, you know, in this day and age, we've got demons and devotees living in the same body. So we can't kill them because we wouldn't have any devotees. But the whole process of Sankirtan is to get rid of our demoniac natures.
Maybe Krishna is saying that he is Suhirdam Sarvabhutanam. That means he is a well-wisher for all devotees, so he wants to warn Kamsa as well. I mean, one last one.
True, right. Yeah, he wants to put the fear of God into Kamsa. When Krishna was born, Kamsa thought, it's probably not a good idea to kill him now. Won't look very good. And in any case, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I won't be able to kill him. So even you know, around about that point, Kamsa was being purified. Huh? Even he realized. And everybody knows, this is why the demons don't like God. It's even why we don't like him sometimes too, because of our demoniac. Because when God wants something, have a guess what? He gets it. You know, Aniruddha means he who can't be stopped. It's the mind. The presiding deity of the mind. Have you ever tried to stop your mind? Don't try, because you can't. It's not possible. Right? So God cannot be stopped. So when he wants something, he gets it. But the demons hate that. No! No! But even comes to realize, he's born now. That's it. I'm finished. Right? And Prabhupada explains. From that point on, Kamsa was always thinking about Krishna. He's always thinking about him when he was sleeping, when he's cleaning his teeth, when he was going about his daily activities. He was thinking of Krishna, just like a devotee thinks of Krishna. But he was thinking unfavorably, and so therefore not a devotee. Whereas a devotee is always thinking about Krishna, but favorably. This is in the process of surrender, to always do things favorable. I guess it's when the demon's hanging on, oh, Krishna, I don't want to give up. Whatever it is that we don't want to give up. Then our demoniac tendencies manifest within the heart. So, many, many reasons why it was announced. Kamsa, you fool. Don't you know? So, of course, when the devotees heard that, they go, yay, Haribo! Right, they're all fired up. And Kamsa's, ugh. So, it was setting the scene for Krishna's pastimes. It was like, at the beginning of the aarti, what do we do? At the beginning of aarti, what do we do? Blow the conch. Right? So that's what it was like that. So at the beginning of the whole story, so we all know, yay, Krishna's coming. What do you think? Does that make sense? I've not seen it stated anywhere, but if you think about it, right? Think about it. It makes sense. So, and what is that called? What is that? It's called Leela. Right? Leela, pastime. And Leela Shakti. Right? Leela Shakti. The potency of the pastime. And all of these details are actually Krishna. It's Krishna. In the form of his Leela Shakti. Nrikeshwari.
At the end of the class, you mentioned that devotees also are not interested in material facility and also not into too much learning.
Yes.
What's the problem with learning?
What's the problem with learning?
Yeah.
I know everything. And it can be an obstacle to doing. Right? Just thinking you're doing, but you're not. And Prabhupada says, we're not armchair philosophers. We are practical doers also. Right? So here's what happens sometimes. The devotees start to look down on things like, cleaning the courtyard. I don't do that. I'm a brahmana. Right? And so the transcendental nature of devotional service escapes somebody who's too learned. Right? And makes us unable to appreciate some of the more basic things. So, interesting, here Prabhupada says, smelling the flowers, cleansing the temple, karo harer mandir majanani shu, right? Amarish Maharaj went to the temple, right? Karo Harer Mandira. Mandira Karo. He went to the temple. But then what did he do when he got there? Marjanadi Shu. The first thing he did was clean it. Now he's the emperor of the whole universe. Right? Maharaj Ambarish is the emperor of the whole universe. But what's the first thing he did? He went to clean the temple. Didn't go to the Bhakti Shastri. Right? He went to clean the temple. So what does that tell you? He did. Afterwards, Satkatodaye, right? He heard the Satkata. So it wasn't that he wasn't philosophical. But he was practical first, then philosophical later. Does that make sense? So this is where too much learning, we can get a bit full of ourselves. Whereas, you know, coming to clean the temple, clean the kitchen, I recommend, highly recommend cleaning the kitchen. The cooks will leave all sorts of mess everywhere. And you'll think, not another beep beep pot. Right? You know what? If you want to experience the highest pleasure of bhakti, you know where you can find it? In the kitchen. That's where I found it, most often than not. And you know, the brahmanas, the cooks, they'll give you all of their pots. Well, they used to do that to me anyway. I remember the first day I shaved up and I got the opportunity to do the kitchen cleanup by myself. And, you know, in a matter of a few weeks, I'd gone from living a fairly comfortable life in Hawthorne, Adelaide, South Australia, with my girlfriend at the time. And then I was in Melbourne and everything was gone. And I, all my long hair was gone as well. Everything. My girlfriend, my car, my everything was gone. And it was midnight. I was in the kitchen and I still hadn't finished. I was in tears. I was crying. Because I realised everything's gone. What am I? I'm a nothing. But I was happy. I was very happy. You know, sometimes you can be crying tears of happiness. bittersweet. So, too much learning and we think, yes, I know everything. But I'm not doing anything practical. Right? Whereas we can see from Ambarish Maharaj's example and in here, but this coming from Ambarish Maharaj. Karo Hare Mandira Mahajanadishu, cleaning the temple. Then, what's the next line? Sat Katodaya. Shrutim Macharya Chutta Sat Katodaya. So, he was also associating with the devotees and hearing, and so thereby cultivating knowledge. That's what. This is why we have the Bhagavatam class, why we have the Bhagavad Gita class, why we do have Bhakti Shastri, is to understand the essence of the Bhakti Shastra, and what Bhakti is. But we've got to make sure that we just don't cultivate the knowledge and then not do anything. Right? Now, what do we do? What do we do? It's a good question. You can clean a kitchen, or clean anything for that matter. But for maximum purification, we do Harinam. This is our collective duty and responsibility. Lord Chaitanya appears, Krishna Varnam, Twisha Krishnam, Sango Pangastra Parasadam, Yagyai, Sankitan, Praye, Yujanti Hi, Sumedasaha. Those who have a little bit of intelligence, associate with Lord Chaitanya because they know Lord Chaitanya is the Yuga avatar, right? Yuga avatar, and that he's promoting the Yuga Dharma, the Dharma of the Yuga. And the Dharma of the Yuga is what? Sankirtan prayer. Sankirtan. Yoo-hoo. Hari Hari Bol. So, and of course, cleaning the kitchen is part of the Sankirtan movement. Right? Cleaning the temple is part of the celebrating festivals like this is part of Sankirtan. Right? But for maximum purification of the heart, going on Harinam Sankirtan is like, you know, nitroglycerine. If you want to blow up your material desires, right? Who wants to blow up their material desires? Most of us, yeah, wouldn't go astray, right? The way to do that, you know, if you want to powerfully, effectively blow up material desires, go on Harinam Sankirtan. I mentioned this a few months ago. You go on Harinam Sankirtan, you chant Hare Krishna with the devotees, then all of a sudden, you're not walking in Birch Street anymore. You're in Vaikuntha. You feel like you're walking 6 inches off the ground. Right? And you feel the transcendental ecstasy. You know, all hell can be breaking loose around you. But you feel, how do you feel on Harinam? You just, you're not in the material world anymore. So very powerful. Then, if you want to multiply that exponentially to get Srila Prabhupada's kripa, Srila Prabhupada's mercy, you go out on book distribution. So if you think Harinam is tough, try book distribution. But that's like, you know, that's like a neutron bomb compared to Harinam. Harinam's like nitroglycerine, but distributing Prabhupada's books is even more potent. So, what was your question? What's the problem with too much learning? Okay, so if you want to demonstrate your learning, right, which you do, go out on Harinam and go out and distribute books. Then you will demonstrate that you've actually read those books and that you understand them. Right? Because that's the test. Once you realize, ooh, this book is not for me, it's for somebody else. Right? That's the topmost realization. Of course the book is for us. Right? It is. And we should read it. And we should study it. And we should become expert in the learning of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, we should, this is what the Bhakti Shastri is for. But the test, last week we had our first Board of Education meeting. We created a Board of Education. And do you want to know who's on the Board of Education? Yeah. Prana Prabhu, Shyam Balaba, Goba Vindesh, Priti, she's a teacher, myself, also a make-believe teacher, and Chincharupa. Now, Chincharupa is a real teacher. Teacher by doing. So, Prana was saying how in America, what do they call it? Service learning? Service learning. And nobody's going to like this. There are devotees who already think, Bhakti Shastri, disciple course, founder Acharya course, what's the other one? Read the Lilamrita. You're just making life hard for us. You're just creating problems for us. We just want to get initiated. Why are you making it so hard? But we want, I want at least, that the devotees that we offer to Srila Prabhupada and to Radha Balabha, they're of the highest caliber. They're the best trained. Right? And so one of the things we're talking about adding to the Bhakti Shastri is not just reading the books, but also you have some service learning. So you have to do some service to demonstrate. And why? Why would we ask the devotees to do service? What's wrong with us? Why would we do that? What do you think? Why would we ask devotees to do service? Krishna, what do you think? Why would we ask the devotees to do some service? You think? Yes, to show that they actually read the book. Huh? If you read the book, but you're not doing any service, better go back and read the book again. Right? See, and I'll tell you what, you know, there are different levels of learning, right? And you may be able to read, just like the kids can recite Bhagavad Gita slokas, you know, and then you ask them, what does that mean? And they go, who? You want me to know what that means? So, you know, there's different levels of learning. You can repeat information. It's like, you know, Wikipedia, it's just, there's a lot of information there. And you may know all of it, but not practically be able to apply any of it. And so therefore, we have jnana, but then higher than jnana is what? Vijnana, right? And so Prabhupada says, you know, bhakti is not just superficial learning. It's deep, deep realized learning of our philosophy, and deep, deep realized learning of the philosophy means actually putting it into practice and doing it. And so we see with Ambarish Maharaj comes to the temple and he cleans it first. He doesn't come to the temple, saunters down to the kitchen. I wonder what's going on in here. Ooh, that looks good. I might stick around for a little while. Right? Of course, bhakti begins with the tongue. Right? Jivado. So that's not bad. We know it's not bad. Eating prasadam. Prasad sevaya. It's good. But it's a certain level of realization. And we want to go deeper. Deeper, deeper. There was a time when I tried to eat all seven offerings. And have a guess what happened. What do you think happened when I tried to eat seven offerings in a day? I got very bad indigestion. Only Krishna can eat seven offerings a day. So, vijnanam. Jnanam, vijnanam. And we see vijnanam in those devotees who study Prabhupada's books and then put them into practice and went on Hari. And so you saw in the early days, Prabhupada just said, go out on Harinam. So what do the devotees do? Very interesting. And then I'm not suggesting that we all give up our jobs and go out on Harinam. Not practical. But, you know, some Harinam we need to put into our lives. Because we're the Sankirtan movement. How can we be a member of the Sankirtan movement if we don't go out on Sankirtan? Just a simple thing. Huh? That comes from reading Prabhupada's books. So we test the learning of the devotees by not only testing whether they know slokas or they know which you know, philosophical principle comes up with page in a book, right? That's, which is not bad. We should know those things, but at the same time, we test it by practical observance of behaviour. How's that sound? So it's not just study; it's how much we put it into practice. Does that make sense? Yeah. Or, here's a point also. Whilst Harinam is enjoyable, we don't do it to enjoy it. This is an interesting point, right? We chant Hare Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, not for our pleasure. That's why sometimes, you know, or even this morning, slow the kirtan down, because there's all this running around and jumping and swinging and all that kind of stuff, and then nobody's chanting. Right? They stop chanting. All these boys, they're funny, aren't they? They play mridanga, but they don't chant. You watch. You notice? Anybody notice? Watch them. And it was funny this morning when I got one of them, when I got Sudarshan to chant, he had to stop playing mridanga. And I was always taught, when you play the mridanga, you've got to chant. Right? So you've got to learn, even if it's, you know, I only play rudimentary mridanga, but at least I still chant. They play fancy mridanga, but they stop chanting. So what's the point of the fancy mridanga? What is the point? Tell me, maybe you know.
Support the kirtan.
Support the kirtan. But you're not chanting. Anyway, test. The test, the proof is in the pudding. Right? So when we say, oh, here's a really good mridanga player, but then why isn't he chanting Hare Krishna? And also, you know, doing the twirly whirlies, doing the stomp. You know, when I was a kid, the stomp was a dance that you did when you were rock and rolling. You did the stomp. So, you know, the stomp with no kirtan is... And if we approach the kirtan just with the idea of enjoying, we got it wrong also. The kirtan is performed for Krishna's pleasure. And you'll enjoy, there's no doubt that you will enjoy. But we don't come into the kirtan with, because you see sometimes, you know, the little kids, it's Mangal Aarti, and usually Mangal Aarti is a fairly somber occasion, right? But then they get grab and they start spinning around. What are you guys doing? Mangal Aarti is not for ring around the rosy. Whatever. No. This is proper training. You don't do that in Mangal Aarti, do you? We know who does do it. I won't mention any names, but they're fairly short. Hey, what? you don't do it, Hare Krishna, do you? No, ring around the rosy in Mangal Aarti. We meditate on Srila Prabhupada. That's learning. Actually, this is our culture. This is actually our culture. The finer points of Vaishnava culture. That kirtan is actually service. It's not to enjoy. You will enjoy, but that's not why you do it. You do it because it's service, it's seva, and it's for our purification. Otherwise, what happens is you come in the kirtan and think, oh, yeah, that's a fun. And then it's not fun. And you think, oh, this is no good. What am I doing this for? Huh? And then the kirtan becomes dry. Because it is, and it will be dry if you approach the kirtan just to have fun. It will be dry. Because the mood is offensive. To want to jump into the kirtan and just enjoy it is actually offensive. Isn't that interesting? And so at some point in time, you'll Oh, this is too hard. What am I doing this for? Oh, I want to do something else. I'll play the mridanga. And I'm not singling you out. Right? Just a thought that I had after this morning's kirtan. And a general, it's a general comment about kirtan practice. Our kirtan culture is done in a mood of service. Playing the mridanga is done in a mood of service, and it's done to support the kirtan, definitely. But we should not forget the chant. That's why these guys, they play in the kartels, and I'm always bending down. Hey, what's going on here, fellas? Have you noticed that? You have. It's like, and I'm not listening to the mridanga. I'm trying to hear the mantra. Anything else? While we're having fun, we're enjoying. We better stop enjoying. We better go and do some service. What do you think? Okay, Grandpa Shiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Janmashtami Mahotsava Ki Jai. Gaura Bhaktavinda Ki Jai.